I wouldn't be messing with you, though.
Hello. Bye.
So, you came in 1904?
Huh?
1904
yeah,
is when you came?
We came for it in 1904. And at that time, not over 300 people here lived on Optimus, I don't think. If there's that many, I don't know. And the first transportation we had was that sailboat run from Rockport a couple of times a week, bringing the mail, and they also brought, I guess, some freight, and somebody wanted to ride back there and stay overnight and then come back, or stay over a few days and come back. But that's without somebody went with their own private boat. They had sailboats. And I don't know just exactly when the first motorboats started to get here. Run wrong, long after that. They were right after that when they started getting motorboats here. And I just don't know exactly, but I don't imagine it was around like 1905 time we got the first motorboats here. And then several people started building little boats. They're just small boats with little engines.
That was from here to Harbor Island.
Using to fishing with, you know. And I think it was 1911 when they stretched out, dug a channel to Randy's Pass, you know. And after they dug a channel to Corpus, the first channel to Corpus, that was just a flat area over there, you know. And it was either 1911 or something like that, or 12, when they dug that channel to Corpus. And then after that, they started running boats from Corpus. First it was a Gypsy, and then they had one they called a Gray Fox, was running from Corpus, run trips there every day. And later on, they got one they called Japonica. She'd make trips and bring in passengers over. And some of them make a trip over just to get seafood dinners over here to Klein's restaurants, you know, Klein Point.
Mm-hmm. You know, how long was that here?
Klein's moved in 1916. They moved to Flower Bluff. And they were gone when the 1916 storm came up. I believe it was
1916 or 1919.
They were gone. They were moved to Flower Bluff. I think Klein, when they had a storm in Galveston, 1915, done a lot of damage. I think Klein decided that he wanted to get away from here because he's out exposed to that. You know, the water right out there.
That's
on the channel.
Everything was, wasn't it?
Well, Klein's right. Of course, we had this waterfront was here a little different than it is now. We had used to have wharf there. They called it the Cotter's Wharf. And then they had the Coast Guard Wharf.
But that was all right here.
On this side, right along where the Fisherman's Wharf is, along there. On this side, on this side.
There wasn't anything.
Then it got. After they got the channels, you know, they got two boats got to running from Ramsey's Pass over here, and they were bringing passengers, and then they got to bring in the mail from Ramsey's Pass, you know, after they got
channels.
And I don't know when that was, about 1912, I guess, when they started running the mail from Ramsey's Pass, and they had motorboats,
right.
You know, and they all bring passengers and freight, and some of them come over and stop at Klein's to, you know, just get seafood dinner, but then they come in to this, they built a wharf, they called a city wharf, which was where the sports center was, you
mm-hmm.
know, it used to be Matthew's
yeah,
place.
Right. That before that, it was Barney's place.
Barney's place, he was out there where Fisherman's Wharf is now, to
yeah.
the right.
Okay.
Barney's place was to the right, where Fisherman's Wharf is right now. That's where his was. But right straight down at this main Alster Street, the city wharf was down there. That was where the Matthew place was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the same one called Sports Center, you know.
Right.
They got tore to pieces after. They tore up the storm and they tore it down in this last storm. But anyway, the boats used to come in there and bring freight and passengers. And they got mail boat running from Randy's Pass, bringing mail every day. And they'd take fish back. You know,
yeah.
from the fish houses.
Would they sell it?
And bring ice. They have fish houses here, and they'd pack out the fish, and these motorboats would take them to Randy's Pass, you know. And
What people were catching the fish? They had just people over here with small boats.
Yeah, all the local people was commercial fishing. That was the main thing here, commercial fishing in those days. And there was few taking parties. The old Top and End had party boats taking people out for Top and End, Top and fishing. And the town depended pretty much on commercial fishing until, well, I don't know, just, I imagine up till the 1930s, it was, commercial fishing was pretty important here. Then finally it got more into party business and less commercial.
More tourists started coming.
Depended more on tourist trade and less on commercial fishing. Of course, now it depends back on the tourist altogether.
Well, when did they build the first ferry? I guess it was the causeway where the railroad.
Well,
was
the first they used to have railroad running down to Harbor Island. Used to bring freight down there, and they used to bring tank cars down there. They had to take oil.
Uh-huh.
They used to bring oil in from Mexico and load it into tanks.
So that was the first, really, the closest to transportation again was the railroad coming to, what was it, Harbor Island?
Railroad run to Harbor Island, and they had these tanks over here, tank farm over here, and oil came in from Mexico. We didn't have any oil in Texas then. And they bring oil in, and these tank cars would take it in, load it in the tank cars, and take it into town. Then some would, tugs and small barges would come down there and take some of the oil and take it up in a coastal, take it up north. And then and some went into Corpus too, a barge. But most of it, I think, was taken by tank cars. And later on, the first transportation we got out of here outside of boats was they took and took some flat cars and they took a Ford motor and made a truck to pull these flat cars. And they pull these flat cars on that same track. And that was when the first ferry started running. And they take about 6 cars. That's about all they could take.
And that ran from Harbor Island
to Randy's Pass. And they come out here to after they got the ferry. They first run what we call a jitney, a little thing, a little bus like on track. It just brought people down here. Little boats would pick them up.
If you wanted to go over there, you had to go over to
the little boat. We had little boats you could hire. Some of us making regular trips from here over there, and you could get on one of them and go there and get on this. They called it a jitney, and ride that thing to Randy's and back, and made about 2-3 round trips a day. Then later on, they got a ferry. Then they brought some, pulled 2 flat cars, and they run some cars up on these flat cars.
So the flat cars came from Aransas.
Yeah, brought them from Aransas back to the ferry, and then they'd run them cars off of there, and then run on the ferry, and then come over.
What was the first ferry?
Well, I think one of them named Addie.
And that ran from Harbor Island, but it didn't come to where it is now, did it? Didn't it come over in front of...
It come from Harbor Island and run right across in here.
To where Sports Center is or somewhere
Between the Sports Center and where Fisherman's Wharf is right now, right in between there. They had a landing right there, just the side of where Fisherman's Wharf is now. And they'd come in there and land. Then later on, they put the landing over there on the end of that point over there where... Ben Vaughn had his place over there on Turtle Cove Point. They put a landing over there later, a little bit shorter, and had to run around the dock. They used to have the landing on this side. Then when the oil companies built this dock here, they had to put the landing around the corner down in their way. And so they put this other landing that was in here in the cove. They put it out on the end of that point there. So where Ben Vaughn's place is over there, Turtle Cove. And I think it was the Mitzi and the Addy, I believe, was the first two ferries, I believe.
What year was that?
Well, you was working in the 30s, that was running then.
36.
The first time the ferry started running, they had a landing. The very first time was at the City Wharf there, where the Sports Center was.
Yeah.
And they run in there for a short time, and then for some reason they decided it was a better place to put the landing. They put a landing over so they wouldn't have to run up the wharf, the people on the cars.
Mm-hmm.
So that they could come right off the ferry and right on the ground.
And when was that about?
Well, Josephine, you was working there in 1937.
36 and 37.
About
how many people lived here then?
And, well, I don't know. I don't suppose there's any more than 500 if there's that many. Maybe 400 or 500.
There wasn't that many people here when I came. I thought it was about
300. About 400, maybe, like that. Counting everybody.
That kind of broke it up. Then when was the first school?
Huh?
When did they put the first school in?
Well, the first school I went to was a little old, one-room building, and this building used to set right down there about where, Sam Allen's store mm-hmm. was, right there.
Right behind the Tarpon Inn.
It was right there, right in front of where the Sam Allen's store, what they call it, some kind of a curio shop now.
Yeah,
Well, you sit there, and then later they moved it up, and it was right in here, just right about 50 feet of this house, right on this line. But my dad then moved it on that property. And I think it was 1914, they built a high-raised four-classroom school with an auditorium. And it was right down here, past the end of this property here, down just past the Sam Allen property, right down there. Just past to where Jerry Clanton lived down there, only right straight down the end of this street here,
mm-hmm.
right out there. It was facing right on this street. And it was a high-rate building, about 12 feet off the ground. And it was a nice building, concrete structure. But when 1919 hurricane came,
that destroyed everything.
What happened, if they'd have put it on piling and down in the ground, it would stay there, been there today, because it was a well-built, reinforced concrete building. And they all had good material in it. But it was 12 feet off the ground, well up above the water. But they set these concrete piling, and they just set them on cement blocks, And the blocks only went a little ways in the ground. Well, it's water just, of course, kids playing on there all the time. It's sandy. There was no grass or nothing. And that water come rushing on there and just cut right under and cut right under those pillars and cut right out from under there. And the building just sagged down in the middle and just broke. It just cut right up under the piers, and it just ruined the building.
So there was nothing supporting it then?
No, it cut the supports out. It's tied running, and cut the supports out, and it wrecked that building. But then after 19 storm, at that time when we had a school in there, we'd had three school teachers. We never had used a fourth room yet. Three school teachers had a nice auditorium, but after the hurricane, there's a lot of people moved to Randall's Pass.
But that was because the hurricane was so bad.
1919, that was real bad. It washed nearly all the island away. Nearly all, because everyone in the house is low, and most of them up in this end of the town, and they wasn't protected in any way. And of course, now we got a lot of them up on high pilot, and they would stay. But that houses nearly all washed away, and so many people moved away, and I think after 19 hurricane, by the beginning of 1920, there probably wasn't over 100 people living here. Counting the Coast Guard and all. There wasn't many people left here.
Some
people moved away. Some moved to Rockport. My folks moved to Rockport. My dad got ill and then he couldn't have to be with his doctor. And some of the folks, like the Mercers, moved to Randy's. That is Bob Mercer and Edith Mercer and Tom Mercer and John Mercer. That's a different Mercer family. The little John Mercer, the one that Miss Kate and them lived here, now they stayed here after the storm. That bunch of Mercers, and Winks, they call her, and John Mercer's kids. They just lived here. I don't know when they moved away from here. Of course, the kids got married and moved away. But that's one family stayed. Then there's W.A. Farley, Will Farley, that
mm-hmm.
your grandfather, Barney's uncle.
Right.
And Bob Farley. And Bob Farley had
19 houses here. And every one of them got washed away. He didn't even have a thing, you know, just a few little blocks left in the ground. It washed his property. His property is all east of the Coast Guard station.
Well, that storm was water, not wind damage.
Well, it had lots of wind, too, but the reason the water done so much damage because the tide had already got up. All it was a slow-moving storm, and the bay is just filled up with water, and the island was submerged with water before the wind ever hit. And there was so much water here already that wind blowed a long time because of slow-moving storm, and it just gradually just tide running back and forth, just washed everything loose. Washed most things over in Corpus Bay and around. There's big piles of wreckage down here towards the trash dump. There's a row of hills just the side of the trash dump back at the next step flat, and there must have been 25 or 30 houses, maybe 40 houses, that were just broke to pieces, just cluttered up and stacked up, but it piled up against that. There was hills down there.
Well, how did people get started again?
Well, some of them that stayed here, they had help from the Red Cross, and some of the houses stayed because they got wreckage piled in front of them. There had been more houses lost, but now, I tell you, Bob finally had 19 houses, counting his home, and he'd built all them and had about 18 rent houses. Then there's all east of the Coast Guard station, washed everything away. There wasn't a thing left. And the Coast Guard station was wood, and it was just a little ways above the ground. There wasn't a splinter in it left. It washed completely away, the Coast Guard station. And Ed Carter and his mother, Mrs. Carter.
23 houses that Ed Carter's did?
Carter did. And counting the property in. And they practically all washed away. They had nothing left. The main part of the property in, the part that's where they have the main part now, that washed completely away, and the part back that they used for the kitchen, it was the only thing left, and it was down in a big hole. The water was washed around it, and it was laying down right on its side in a big hole. Well, after 1920, sometime in the 20s, a fellow by the name of Mr. Earl came down here and jacked that building up, straightened it up, and got it where it was usable.
How long had it been here before the 1919 storm?
Well, that old Carpenter Inn was built, I think, and when it washed away, was built, I think, back in the 1880s or something. I read something in a book where it burnt up, but now I don't know. See, I'm not so well. Ever since I know, that Tarpon Inn was there. Uh-huh. We moved here in 1904, and it was there then. And from 1904 on, it was there, and it was there for some time. And I read somewhere in one of these things where it said a Tarpon Inn burnt up and rebuilt it, but I didn't know that. That's uh-huh. something I didn't know. But the first thing, that old original Tarpon Inn, it was some government commissary building. When the government, I think, when we was building the old Mansfield jetty, I think, that's when they had the, built in the 1880-something. They had a commissary building, and a fellow by the name of Frank Stevenson later on had the lighthouse. Frank Stevenson bought it, and he made a kind of a hotel out of it. Later on, he sold it to Mrs. Carter and Hatfield. So Hatfield was married to Mrs. Carter. And Hatfield got fixed up. Well, I don't know just when it was. When I was pretty young, Mr. Hatfield and Mrs. Carter separated, and he went back to somewhere, some Kentucky or someplace where he come from. So Mrs. Carter kept it and run it, and Coach Ed Carter grew up, and he took over until 1919 storm when it was washed away. And they also had a dining room out there about where the CPL office is now. They had what to call a Tarpon Inn Cafe, and that was built.
It was a separate piece.
Yeah, a separate building. That was built, I imagine, long about 1912 or somewhere along there. It was a pretty good sized building, and they had it for the dining room. And that washed completely away. It was all that was just completely gone.
What was left? Was anything?
Well, there's a few things. The only house I know that really didn't get water in it was the Sims house. Now, there is Anime Sims house. The old Sims house is just east of there, just back of where my shop is.
Uh-huh.
And it was a little ways back from the street, and the ground was higher there. And the water came up just close to the front porch, but never come under that house.
Never washed under.
And that was houses just full of people as it could get. And right across...
The people stayed over here?
Yeah,
oh
yeah.
That's right.
They couldn't get away.
They couldn't get away.
There were ones that did stay. There were a lot of people stayed, but left, but a good many people stayed.
How many stayed, about?
Well, I think there's something around about 150 or so, something like that, stayed.
How many of them survived?
Well, there was only about 5 people lost, and they should have been lost. They could have been saved. They just took it. But the Sims house was the only house that really, I think, was above the water. And right where my shop is, there's a big high hill there, great big high hill with cedars on it.
Uh-huh.
And there's about half the people on the island was got up on the hill. That's where they had to get out of the above the water. And another house belonged to Cooper Walker. And right, just close to where Billy Sims' house is now. Uh-huh. Billy Sims bought that house from Walker, and he tore it down there to build this other house. And it was right across from where Alan's house, Anime's house, had a house there, and it was about that high off the ground. And the water was just right up sloshing against the floor, and it was full of people. And of course, if it went down, they'd have to take the people out of there and put them on that sand hill. That's what they had to do. And most of them, and there's the building down here called Hamilton Building. It's down here where Trailer Park is here, down here now. They called it Buckhorn. They used to call it Buckhorn.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Well, that building used to be a 2-story cement block building. And there were some people in there, and they tried to get them all out because, you know, on account of it, it was built on a slab.
Right.
And the tide cut under it, and the building just collapsed. And there was 4 or 5 people in there, and that's the ones that lost their lives. But the one fellow was over 100 years old. Called him Old Tony. And there's one other old man, name called John Franklin. He took a notion to go down, and he had a place down there towards where the Marine Lab is now.
Mm-hmm.
And he went, took a notion, he's something down there, and they had to try to get him to not go. Go down there and see about something. He wanted to get out of his house. And he drowned. On the way down. He fell in a hole or something. He thought he was getting along with some age, too. There's about 5 people, that's all, I think, lost their life. And they shouldn't have lost their life. But most of the people, more than half the people survived by staying on top of that hill over there.
Oh, just without any homes or anything, just standing around the cedars?
And there are just 2 houses I know that had people in them. I know that the Sims house and the old couple walking house was full of people. And I don't know that this house over here that Buddy Harris has got now, Ms. Garden's town, it used to be over the east of Henry Studeman's.
And they moved?
Yeah, they moved it after 19th storm. It was well after 19th storm. Coast Guard rented that and used it for Coast Guard station after 19th storm and used it until they got their Coast Guard building built. Then later, Bob Mercer sold it to Loomis, B.J. Loomis. B.J. Loomis moved over where it is now. But I don't know how much water got in that building or whether anybody stayed in there or not during that that storm. But there were many a place that you could stay in. Their building was abandoned. We had a There was a building set right here, right east of me here. The one that Blisby used to own.
Mm-hmm.
That fellow by the name of Clark built it. He bought that lot from my dad and built it long about 1912, that house. And it didn't get washed away. It was built up on posts about that high off the ground. And it had some wreckage piled up by it and kind of protected it and stayed. And these 2 houses here, there was that one, that's a different Ben's rebuilt it house, but that one of the houses and another one next to it, they had wreckage piled in front of them, and they didn't wash away, but nobody stayed in them because the water was high and washing by here, but they didn't get washed away. And one other house that's tore down now where Shorty Smith's living, where Hayes is living down there, trailer house.
Right.
Well, they had a house there that stayed in hurricane, so wreckage piled in front of it. And there's another house where the drugstore is now, belonged to John Farnes. And those 2 houses stayed because wreckage piled in front of them.
So
but nobody stayed in them because the general kind of was too dangerous to stay in them.
Right, but the storm was coming from the north.
Yes, the storm, usually most of the storms when they blow right a little bit west and north, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And not so bad, but the 19th storm, it blew a little bit from the east more, and that made the waves come in worse.
Right.
It blew more on the Gulf.
More water.
And it had a higher tide than we ever had, and it stayed up longer. But if a lot of the buildings we got down here now, those high-rate buildings down to the marinas down there. They would stay because they built up higher in the water.
Well, not only that.
But the houses all low, though, built close to the ground.
They started building all the houses on pilot.
Yeah, now, yeah. After 19 storm, more people got storm conscious, and they built more of them higher. Built back for. We didn't have houses down back in the hills those days. All was right up here on the waterfront,
right.
You know.
So the population decreased to about 150 after that storm?
Yeah, after the storm, after the population dropped down, I don't guess there's any more than 150 people at the most.
When did it start building back up?
Well, it just started to build back up again good, and then World War, World War One kind of made the place, kind of slowed things down, you know, then the storm came along. No, it was in the 20s, along in the mid-20s, it started to come back again. B.J. Loomis was the first one to build the fish house back. Down here. They rebuilt the city wharf after the hurricane.
Uh-huh.
The city wharf, they rebuilt it. And look out. And B.J. Loomis has put the first fish house down here. He got help from the Red Cross.
Uh-huh.
Then later on, they've got about two more big fish houses down there, and Matthews had a restaurant down there.
Well, the Red Cross gave them money to rebuild. They helped give them funds.
Well, they helped. And they gave some money. They don't help much as they do now, but they helped quite a bit. They're the one that paid for the cleaning up of all the wreckage here, you know. And what they did those days, people could identify the wreckage. They just go and they tear it all up and haul it to your place and put it on your property for you.
Yeah.
And some of those people that had that, like the Mercers, the houses, the John Edith Mercer, their house was damaged, some of them cut out around it, you know, the storm. And so the Red Cross, they tore it down and took it to Randy's Pass and built it over there for them.
Yeah.
And they helped that way.
So the government didn't help any then. It was all mainly
the Red Cross.
It
was just the Red Cross then. They didn't have no government loans. And the Red Cross, of course, doesn't help as much as they do now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a help, a big help.
What did they do in the... Wasn't it World War One where they hid the light from the lighthouse or something like that? Wasn't there a story about that?
Well, that happened way back in the Civil War.
Oh, that was the Civil War?
Yes.
My goodness, I didn't know that.
Yeah, see, what happened when the lighthouse was built in 1852,
uh-huh.
And then when the Civil War got going, when the federal troops started to move down the Texas coast, you know,
right.
While they started moving in down there, well, the Confederates decided that they wanted to keep the federal troops from having that light to go by, the, you know, to steer the vessels in, you know.
Uh-huh.
So they took the light, the lens out, and took it out and buried it somewhere out in the mud.
Right.
And they dynamited it, the tower, but it didn't knock it down. It cracked it. It cracked
right.
It, dynamited it. They thought the federal troops would use it, you know, and use it for lights, get light signals to guide their boats in. That's the reason that they did that day.
Well, that...
And then later on, after the war got over and they got the lighthouse going again, they got the lens back, you know, and put it back up there. Then in later years, they put a new type lens in there.
So they took the old lens, and that's in the
That's
community
the ones that's here, yeah,
there.
That's the ones they took the
so
old lens.
So that one's 120 years old.
Oh, yeah, those old lenses was put in that lighthouse when it was first built.
And it still works, doesn't it?
Well, the old lens, they didn't use it. That is the old lens.
Well, they don't use it, but it seems like I remember them plugging it in one time or something.
Well, they could put a light in it and,
uh-huh.
You know, have a light. I don't know whether they got the lamp with it or not. I don't know
uh-huh.
whether they got... I just had the lens. I saw them over there at the community center. But that old lens... then later years, they put a different lens and it had a flashing light, you know. Instead
uh-huh.
of having
right.
a steady light, they had one that flashed and a little brighter. But my sister Gladys, she used to go up there when Tom Roberts worked up there, and his wife used to be sick. She was supposed to stay up there with him. And she many times she went up and lit up in that tower and lift that light up, and then at night, and then in the morning she'd go up there and put it out.
Wow.
And put it out. And then.
Well, how did it burn? What was it?
Just first, it was originally just had those lens and just had a cool all light.
Uh-huh.
And you had a kind of a door in this on hinges on the glass door in the back part of it. Just open it up and you could get to the light and then clean the globe and trim the wick and fill it with oil, you know. Just a big old brass tank, you know,
uh-huh.
held the oil. And that's what it was, just a cool oil wick light. And then later years was they put a flashing electric, you know, having to spin it. No, that was stuff that happened way back.
Yeah, well, I couldn't remember. I didn't realize it was during the Civil War. That's very interesting.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you'll get that back in some of those books, you know, that's been wrote up about that. There's a lot of things that I didn't know that they've gathered some information. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'd have had President, of course, I'd have thought about such a thing when I was young. If I'd have went and...
Well, was it World War One when they had all the blackouts over here? You had to keep your lights out.
World War Two.
It was World War Two. Yeah. It was 19.
See, World War One, we got into that World War One. There was no danger from any sub or anything coming over here and attacking us in World War One. But World War Two, there were subs operating the Gulf, and they sunk some of the ships. Some of the ships running to the Aruba, running down to carrying oil, you know, down to South America, and they've sunk some ships in the Gulf and then some down off of the Caribbean, and they had to look out for those. And of course, the sub's been sighted right out here, you know, and so they had gun mounted on those hills down there, you know.
Right.
And
that was on White Hill. Isn't it called White Hill?
I don't know what it is.
There's a fort built up
there. Yeah, there was a thing
built. Right.
They had people stationed here all the time during the war, and they kept a lookout all the time, watching and trying to keep an eye out for stuff. They thought maybe some could come up shell those oil tanks over there, you know, on Harbor Island, you know.
How long had those been there on Harbor Island?
What?
The oil tanks.
Well, that was a lot of oil then. That was in World War II, of course. There was a lot more oil tanks then, and the oil was, had oil in Texas going out of here then, and shipping oil out.
Right.
But before, of course, when they were first had tanks over there, well, they were built way back in the teens, you know,
mm-hmm.
and way before 1990, you know, long, I don't know, as far as started building tanks over there, maybe about 1912 or something like that. They started bringing oil from Mexico, like they say, and they landed in there, and they put it in those tanks, and the tank cars would take it on the railroad, you would take it on. And those tanks, most of them were built right on the sands. And then later on, they built the tanks that drove piling all down the ground so they couldn't be undermined.
Mm-hmm.
But those tanks, some of them just collapsed during the 19 hurricane, because the storm washed the water, sand out from under them, and it just folded up, and all the oil went over there. And they say there's a nest over there going on North Beach and over in Calhoun, and they were wearing that oil, just thick, heavy oil, just piled up. And
how far? All the way to Calhoun?
Yeah. Well, he said the wind was right, and just took it right on that way.
Did it get all in Aransas Pass?
No, because it floated about Aransas Pass. It started hitting in there about, right in there, about North Beach, Calhoun, about in there, you know, just the right way the wind was to blow it down in that way. And the people, there was about 378, I think, people, I think, listed that got drowned off the North Beach, you know, and about 1,000 injured. See, the tide gets to run between North Beach and the hill over there, and the people just couldn't get off. They were wanting to get off there, but it's too late. And they had to just ride the wreckage. When the buildings got tore to pieces, they just ride the wreckage across the bay. And, of course, there was like 378, I think, were drowned, and about 1,000 injured. And some of those people, that they picked them up over there, they were just crippled and injured. They was going way back there and past Calhoun, all on that shore. I've heard people talk about it, help pick them up. And they were just had the old thick, heavy oil, like tar, just all in the hair, and some of them were blinded from it.
Yeah.
Couldn't see anything. Some of them were smothered to death, got it in their nose, you know, that old thick oil. It got over there just the time.
Went as far as Calhoun, though.
Yeah.
And I guess it killed a lot of wildlife, too. Man.
Well, of course, there's a lot of cattle drowned, don't
there? How long did it take for them to get that oil up?
Well, I don't know. I'd say it did about that oil. Of course, I didn't know, but it, of course, well scattered. There's several thousand barrels of oil that went over there. And they say that water went clear back to Odom. The tide was higher there than any place, because that's the only time that over around Corpus area they ever got any high water. It was 1919. That's the only storm that hit right. The reason was that the whole bays was just filled with water before that storm came. Then when the storm started blowing, it started blowing from this direction, from the northeast, and it just pushed that water up, and it water got higher over there than it did on the island here, because it kind of blew it by here and then come back. It kind of seesaw. Wind would come up and blow the water, then it did, and the wind would slack down, it kind of run back, you know, it seesaw. But over there, it just pushed it right up against the shoreline, and probably the water was 3 or 4 feet deeper over there than it ever was here, because it piled up against the shoreline. And no other storm has ever blowed the water in like that but 1919. Most of the time it blows the water away from there. It kind of blows off the land and blows the water out of the bay.
Yeah, right. That's kind of like it did during Carla, didn't it? It came from the channel here and came back on us.
Yeah. One hurricane, the bay had quite a bit of water in it in 1942, and that was the one we was gone when we moved to Galveston. And the storm came out and it switched over and started blowing right from the west, and it blowed the Corpus Bay right on top of the island. And it didn't stay very long, but just probably a couple of hours. But what it did, it piled the water up, and the water got just almost high on this end of the island as it ever did in any hurricane. But it didn't last long, but it just run right across this way and just cut big cold and cut that big street out, made it big. Where that street's going down, right down there, that Oleander Street, there was water about 15 feet deep out there where my old shop is. The water was... had a big slough, and they had another slough was cut down right where Alistair Street ends down there, where it goes to the bay with the waterfront, down there east of the sports center. They had a big cut out there, and the tide got higher down in here, and I like down to where Matthew, like Johnny Matthew lived. The water got about higher there than any storm it ever had, because the water piled up there, come out of the bay, and then it kind of run off this way. And time it got down to the waterfront, it didn't have very high tide down the waterfront. It just kind of run over this way, piled up, and then started running off. And of course, it didn't take long to blow that water over here, and then it just went down. But it done a lot of damage while it was washed some buildings loose from the foundations. But was none of compared with 1919 water damage. The water damage. Well, Celia and I had the highest wind, I guess, in any storm we ever had.
Right.
It done more wind damage.
Well, that's when we stayed here then.
You were here?
Yeah, we stayed during Celia. That was 1970, wasn't it?
It done more wind damage in Celia than any storm we've had.
Yeah, there were 3 houses around us that blew up. You know, just the wind, just, they were airtight, and they just blew up. The tops flew off, and the roofs flew off, and then the sides fell.
You know, a funny thing about that Celia, that wasn't supposed to be a very bad storm, you know, and they said it was
90 mile an hour.
Yeah, I said 90 mile wind, and then later on, then getting toward noon that day, it said the wind got about 115, 120 miles.
Better evacuate.
And so we didn't think we were going to need that. But so Josephine, you went to Victoria, didn't you?
Yeah, I
went
to go visit anyway.
Well, anyway, the boys and I, we stayed in the shop over here. And when we saw the water was, the wind was starting to breeze up from the north, and the tide was starting to push that bay down in here, and the water was starting to run up around this house, we decided we'd go over in the shop. So, Tom Keller and Johnny and Jimmy and Jed and Ben, but one of the boys was in the service with it. Robert took, Robert went with you. Robert went with you. No, when the boy went, Robert wasn't with him. Well, anyway, we stayed in that doggone there. And that wind started getting higher and higher from this direction. And first thing you know, it just started blowing that Aransas Bay right up there. And water just started running right up that Alistair Street, you know. And then it came up there and ran up that street, Church Street, you know, going up to Mrs. Florida Roberts up toward Johnny Matthews.
Well,
it came up in that street, but it never come up where my shop
was. But it was mostly rain, wasn't it?
No, it was
the bay.
It wasn't rain, and we didn't have much rain in that storm. That storm didn't rain.
The wind just brought it all the way up there. Well, I remember by our house,
water right from Aransas Bay and flowed down here. But it didn't stay very long because that was all the water was, you see, and it just blowed it down here.
I was going to say, because at our house, we're high there, and the only damage we got was that real hard rain, and it rained so hard, it was like somebody pulled us underwater, and it seeped in around the windowsills.
Well, anyway, Then it didn't blow that way but a couple of hours hard. And then, first thing you know, it started dying down. And I told the boys, I said, the eye started passing over. And I told the boys, I said, don't think this thing over because that thing is going to come back the other way. But I never expected, I've been in a storm before, and every time that I've been in a storm, it always blowed the hardest from the north.
Right.
And when it came back, it blowed, it wasn't as bad. But this one was worse.
Right.
The wind.
I figured. That was it. We got out during the eye of the storm to see how things were. You know, it wasn't so bad. And we thought, you know, it was great that not so much had been torn up as we thought it had been. But boy, when it came back with a bang.
I figured it out. I told the boys, I figured the wind was blowing about 140 miles an hour from the north. And that time, there was nothing damaged around the shop. There was nothing I could see. Of course, it had some damage to get some from the water down the waterfront. I guess Miss Pete's and those places were getting the water issue.
Right, because that lifted her up.
But I wouldn't see nothing blowing apart. But and after it stayed calm for about 40 minutes, then the wind started gradually coming back this way, and man, it got harder and harder and harder. First thing you know, the houses started to disintegrate. The custards were blown to pieces, and the roof blowed off of that other place, that Washateria, you know.
Right, Frank Evans' place, all the places in the marina were torn up.
Steve Frischman got that place down. The roof blown off of it. That stuff, air was just full of that, going everywhere and bombarding our shop over there.
Oh,
the man is slapping big hunks of tin and slapping against your shop and pieces of roof with rocks
on it.
Tar paper roof all built up with rocks on it. Big hunks are like that, slapping the shop. Well, the boys went out and we put boards on that south windows, but we had cracks about that wide between the boards. And every once in a while, a piece of that doggone roof would come in the edgeway, bang, and you knocked all the windows out of that side.
We didn't have any windows knocked out,
and then
we had boards across them, but we could see out. And one side of our house wasn't boarded, the protected side, and I could see animals flying past. That's how hard the wind was blowing. A cat about this far off the ground flew past. And then a little cat, I guess you know.
Cat.
Yeah, probably about a pound like that. And then they said that a big old iron steel rod flew up and killed a horse just about a mile up from our house. Yeah. There in San Francisco. That's how hard it was blowing.
Well,
this tree had stuck
right through it, right. Uh-huh.
We got four windows on that side of the shop, on the south side. And when a window get broke out and the boys got bored, we had a lot of boards in the shop, and they'd get up there and nail boards over there, just up solid, you know. But of course, the rain was beating in around through the crack anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting
right.
But they saved getting a whole lot of water in the shop. And then as winter get broke out, they would nail boards up over another one.
I had scabs on my knees.
Didn't the shop begin to shake?
Shop was groaning.
We
crack,
were too.
Crack, crack, and make cracking noise, you know.
But you'd have to open the windows, you know, let it go through. But it rained so hard. It didn't rain that long, but it rained so hard in a short period of time. You know, like you say, the water was coming in every crack that you had in your house. It came in. It got about this deep in our carpet, and we were shoveling. Taking pots and pans and shoveling water out. And I got scabs on my knees from being on that shag carpet and, you know, getting it out. But most of it was it never got high. It didn't come into the house from the ground. It came in from the rain.
This house, too, did come in from the outside. It came in from raining into the window.
But this house here, you know, we wouldn't got no water in this house and through the roof. And this hurricane wasn't for them old buildings. There's still two buildings over there that are brand new. Those buildings over there.
Uh-huh.
They got big sheets of plywood, that thick plywood on the roof. 4 feet by 8. And they just got them tacked down. They just pulled off the chunks and they just banged this roof.
Boy.
And knocked a big hole in
it
right over our bed.
And
that's the reason we got water in this house. It all got in this ceiling. You see, we got this plywood ceiling. And those lights was filled up with water. It all filled with the water, you know.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, the happy end is how the staple works in the house.
That's how thick it was.
They got some kind of machine that drives those staples down, and that's the only way that holds that roof on. Yeah. Well, this house wouldn't have gotten that damage if it wasn't for that. And my garage got holes knocked in the roof. I got a good heavy shingle roof on there, and it wouldn't have got a leak if it wasn't for that. Those things pounding it, knocking holes in. But that's come remarkable how strong that wind was that that house stood it like it did.
That's the way we felt. Our house is new.
And all that down in Shebu Sands, all those big buildings down there, they all had the roof knocked off.
Ripped off, right.
Something like that. And all these houses look down in this direction, too, going down just the way toward the trash dump. The world of them had that roof off. Someone broke their down to the foundation. And this shows that these old buildings were just built better than the new ones.
Right. People thought, too. That's just like when my father built our home. It's only 9 years old, 8 years old, and it, you know, he built it with the storms in mind. He knew
sure.
He'd be back. He wasn't
well, people building something themselves, they, you know, they think, oh, they want to build it right.
Right.
But these contractors building these houses for these people, they just, main idea is to get them built. And it don't take too much time. Is your sister still here?
No. She's in Florida.
She is? Well, I know she used to work down here. I was
right.
Working down there to
she's
the
Florida,
family
right.
Center. No, I haven't seen her down there. I just wonder.
What about the first post office? Who was that man that was the first postmaster here?
Well, I'll tell you now. The first postmaster I had here when from the time I was a little boy was Emil Roberts. The Roberts, at one time, Roberts had always had a store. W.R. Roberts, Captain W.R. Roberts, Godfrey Roberts' grandfather, built that store. And when I was a small kid and came here, because the old man had died in 1896, I believe, old man W.R. Roberts, Godfrey's grandfather. Then after he died, his daughters, Emma Roberts and her sister Ada and Will Roberts, they used to operate the store. Of course, I think Will Roberts done other things besides working the store. And then later years, Ada Roberts got married and moved to Corpus, but Emma still maintained the store. Yeah, and I don't know which store it was. It was 19... Anyway, they tore that old store down or something, and they she'd had a store. She would rent it. Cotter built some right where this old drugstore, Ed Tanner drugstore is,
mm-hmm.
Right down the end of this... Used to be at Tanner Drugstore.
Right.
What they call that? Some kind of a dress shop.
It's
or something.
Sandpiper now.
Yeah.
It used to
well,
be at Tanner.
Right in there, starting there, and right on down there for about half a block, there was buildings built all in there. They had a drugstore on the end, and in the back end of the drugstore, they had a pool hall and a barbershop. And that next to that was Emma Roberts' store. She had abandoned the old Roberts store.
Mm-hmm.
It had been old. I don't know whether 19. No, it was before 1960, because she bought a boy Ruba, again, to abandon the old store and got this bigger building. And next to that was a post office. Well, first she had the post office in the store.
Right.
Emma did. Then later on they got a post office. That's
and
right.
How long had that been there in the store?
Well, now,
as long as you
I tell you, that store, I don't know just what year she built that store there. But it I was working for her in 1916. I was a grocery clerk. And in the 16 storm, and we hadn't had a storm for 30 years. And Emma, she couldn't believe we could get a hurricane, you know. She
yeah.
Just adopted mostly with reporting hurricanes. It started as a joke. And we went out and opened the store up that morning, and I took a few grocery orders. Those days, you took a delivery wagon and go out with a horse and go up people's houses. Take a book and take down their orders and then go to that store and fill the orders and deliver them. That's the way we did. And got back to stores and the wind starts coming up, the tide starting to come up. We started down the old city wharf and a boat drug them more and was gotten on top of the city wharf pounding. The tide was coming up and getting toward the store. And
now, I hadn't thought of that. You didn't have any communication then when a storm was coming. No warning.
No,
right?
You didn't have much warning. On the Coast Guard, you'd go by the barometer, you know, and people would get information about how the barometer was going down. That's what you went by the old days. And they kind of looked at the weather and the tide and kind of summed it up. But anyway, she saw that it looked like it was getting pretty bad, so we blocked the place up and left. And she went home to be with her mother and with her folks. And but that storm, wind got up to about 150 miles an hour, and maybe 160 and puffed. But the tide didn't get up near high like it did in 1919. So it got up over some of the ground, low ground, but never just barely did get up like about here. Probably just got up over the ground, maybe about 6 inches or something like that. You know, never did get up high enough to wash their buildings away. The 1919 storm, of course, it washed that store away, the Robert store. It washed it completely away, and it and the drugstore.
So all this time, there hadn't been a postmaster, except her, you know, she took care
of it. Yeah, they had a postmaster. They always had a postmaster in the store.
Was she the postmaster?
She was postmaster, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Way before, I guess they had it when it first, before, I don't know who was really the first postmaster here, but they had post office here way back in the 1880s. I'm in 1890s. I know they had post office. I don't know who. I don't know whether Roberts has had it. Probably in the old Roberts store first.
Well, who was the old man then that, I guess when I was in elementary school, he was still living. He died shortly after that. He had a real long, thick white beard. Do you remember?
Godfrey.
Oh, Godfrey. Yeah.
That's his cousin.
Yes, Godfrey Roberts. You see, he's Captain Roberts, the old Captain Roberts that used to be a bar pilot here. Uh-huh. He's the one that died in 1896. And he's the one that owned the old Roberts store. He put the old Roberts store in first, you know, old Captain Roberts. And after he died, well, his family took it over. And Godfrey used to work in that store some, you know. His daddy used to work in it. And, uh-huh. and Godfrey worked in it some. And then later years, Emma dropped out of the post office, and they built a little post office just east of the Roberts store on that same street down there. And Godfrey was postmaster, and he was postmaster from about 1916, 1917, and then 1917 he went into service, and my sister Gladys was working as assistant postmaster. And she had took the post office over in 1917 and all during 1918 until about a year and a half she took the post office and Godfrey got back out of service. And then he came back out of service, well, then he took the post office again. But in 1919 that post office washed away. And there wasn't so many people here, like I say, after 1919. But Godfrey kept the post office in his house. And he had his house up here where Kate Rhodes used to be Kate Carson. They bought the old Roberts house, and they tore it down, and I think she got some of the timbers in that house. She lives in there now. But the old Roberts house is just this side of there. And Godfrey kept the post office in his house for 4 or 5 years. And then later on, they built a little post office down here just in front of where Sam Allen's store was. Had a little post office, a little red post office there. And had that post office there for several years, and Godfrey had it. And then after he dropped out of the post office, Mrs. Gibson took it. Used to be Mrs. Smith then. Bill Smith's mother.
When did they finally, when that railroad stopped coming over here, is that when they used the track? Causeway, the old wooden causeway?
Yes, and later on, like I say, you know, when they first started bringing people over here, the first cars that ever come to Port Aransas, they took a truck, because it was a Model T, and they had it, you know, on the track, and at first they used to bring people in there, and later on they rigged it up where they could hooked on a couple of flat cars, mm-hmm. and they brought these people, these cars out, and they had the first ferry, here. And those cars would come down here, and then they'd get on the ferry, and the ferry would run across and bring them. That's the slow transportation. Right. Wasn't many cars could come. Then in later years, as time passed, they decided that they'd fix a road.
Well, the tourist business started to grow and the commercial fishing died off.
Yes, as they started to get more tourists. And so they wanted to get their cars to get over here better. So what they did, they made a one-way drive out of it most of the way. They put boards across, right across over the track, you know, and had boards to run on. And
you hit it.
Ever so far, they'd have what you call a turnout, you know.
Right. I remember those. I can remember well, when I was little.
And you'd be going on a single road, and you see a car coming the other way. If he's pretty close to the turnout,
whoever was closest.
Yeah. And if you got on the truck in the narrow part, and he was close to the turnout, he'd turn in and let you go by. See.
Right.
That's where you had to get by one another, and that's what they used first.
That was as far as 1955, 56, 57, all the way to 58.
And then, of course, later on, of course, they got the appropriation, and they got the money to build this road they got now, of course, and they abandoned that all.
How did population grow? You said after 1919 storm, it started building, it was real low, and started up again.
Going in the 20s, it started gradually building up then a little bit, and started building more buildings,
and as the tourist industry grew, more and more people.
It started getting more party boats, and the fish house got about 4 fish houses here, and then, you know, had places to sell their fish. And
okay, how did they? Yeah, the tourist industry really grew when they started building the courts. But what about the school? When did they build? They built another one back, I'm sure, after this one collapsed.
Oh well, that one there. Well, I said, after 1919 storm, they had used to have a building over here, and they called it the Woodman's, as it was the Woodman's building, called it the Woodman Hall. And they built a little addition to it, made it a little bit bigger, and used it for a school building. And they used it for a school building until they got some appropriation and got this first school, and then they tore it down
the
over here.
Where the school is now? When the little red schoolhouse?
Yeah, the brick one was there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was about 4 rooms and the auditorium. It's just about where the school garage is now,
right.
You know, but
right
back
behind
in there. Right in here, right in the back of there. And
that stayed for a long time.
Yeah, that was built in, I think that was long about 1928 or something like that, they built that.
How long did it stay? Right up
until? Well, they stayed until they got the appropriation. We got went to build this bigger building, of course.
PH Jones.
I was on the school board anyhow when we got the money to build this. We got to vote the bond and got the money to build the building we got now. Then, of course, after got it built, then we abandoned the other building. And it was getting kind of run down, so they just decided to tear it, to tore it down.
Right. Well, what did you tell me the other day? You're paying the principal?
When this old building was here, and that building there, of course, the principal was getting $150 a month for 9 months. They had just one and other teacher there then. And at first, then later on, they got another teacher. They got 3 teachers. They had 3 teachers. I think about most they had in that building. And they got $90 a month. So the lady teacher got 9 months. And that was what they had, 2 teachers. In those days, we didn't have no janitors or anybody, nobody else working at all. What they did, the school trustees, when I was trustee, I hired a man, and we went down and had cattle on the island. We had to build a cattle guard, and we built a fence around there. We built a new fence. Fence got run down. We built a new fence around it, and we put in window lights and, you know, different repair. And then we did it ourselves, you know. And paid one man $4 a day to help, and him and I did that work. Then the school building, the janitor work was done by the school kids.
Uh-huh.
School kids. Some of the school kids would probably help.
Yeah,
and they'd take some of the kids, and they'd do all the cleaning up of the buildings, and sometimes they'd do some repair, like put in the glass or something, you know.
I guess they did the school part in 1955.
I knew it was something around in that area when they built the new one. Right. Well, weren't there restrictions on school teachers then? Didn't they have to be real careful what they did? Or didn't you have some certain rules?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they had any restrictions or anything any different you have in any other.
Well, what were the teacher contracts like?
Well, I know one time we used to have teachers, we didn't have contracts. Then later you know, got to have the contracts, you know. To sign a tax code. People understood what they were going to get and everything. And to understand if you're going to have a teacher stay or not. But one time we just didn't have no such thing as a contract. You know, teachers stayed. Most kept teachers as long as they wanted to stay, and then they taking off to go get it out of school. We'd have to rustle around and get another more teacher. Now it's quite a difference.
Yeah, right. Everything
they start out there, I think when they first start to teach now, they get about at least 6,000 a year.
Right.